You're listening to SBS.
Did you know forced marriage happens in Australia? It means being pressured, tricked, or coerced into getting married without your free and full consent, including if you are too young to marry. Forced marriage can affect anyone, regardless of age, gender, sexuality, culture, or religion. If this sounds like you or someone you know, free and confidential support is available through a national service called My Blue Sky. Visit mybluesky.org.au or call 02 9514 8115.
Hello and welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast. I'm Raina Sarumpayat and it's Tuesday, August the 11th, 2026. We'll check the markets later on with Mike Jenniker of UBS Global Wealth Management. But it was a day when the Reserve Bank kept the cash rate steady at 4.35% for a second consecutive meeting after three hikes earlier this year. The board saying that the economy appeared to be slowing as expected. But unlike in June, it did consider raising rates, with each member worried that inflation was still too high. Governor Michelle Bullock warning that higher rates were, quote, quite possible. There was more detail in the quarterly statement on monetary policy. The RBA revising up its growth forecast slightly over the next 2 years and, most significantly, revising down its near-term forecasts for trimmed mean or underlying inflation. Though the trimmed mean isn't tipped to return to around the 2.5% target until late next year. I spoke to IBRI economist Anthony Maloof, who, like most economists and the market, got it right with his rates call for today.
No, it definitely wasn't a surprise. We flagged for some time that we think the RBA's hiking cycle is well and truly over. We think inflation has come in well below expectations, and that was flagged today in their revisions in their inflation forecasts for at least the new term. They've downgraded their forecasts. In saying that, though, there are still some risks, which they also did flag today. But in terms of the decision itself, impacts of their latest rate hike are still yet to be felt. In saying this, though, when you look at some measures or some factors of the economy, spending is holding up okay. We did get some June spending data last week from the ABS, and it looks like spending, at least in the discretionary spending, is actually doing quite well. So that suggests to us that the real impact of higher rates is yet to really be felt, at least for households. But in saying that, though, we have seen a cooling in the labour market. Unemployment is a bit higher than where the RBA previously anticipated it to be at this moment in time. And then on top of that, we've also seen the housing market. It has definitely taken a bit of a downturn. I shouldn't say a downturn, but maybe more of a correction in recent months. But like I've mentioned to many others, the RBA, they don't necessarily target house prices, but rather they care about that secondary impact of lower house prices and what that does that mean for things like consumption and things like investment via the wealth channel. And I think that will be a bit of a concern, and that's been flagged by the RBA in recent weeks, including today.
Where do you think the next move is, in which direction and when?
Do we think that the RBA keeps rates on hold until the middle of 2027, where they'll start their cutting cycle around about that second half of next year? We've penciled in a August rate cut next year. That'll be the start of their rate cutting cycle. But things can change very, very quickly. As we all know, things are very uncertain. But as it stands right now, we think the next move in rates will be down, and it will be coming in the second half of next year.
The board is concerned about weak productivity in Australia, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is. And they flagged that in their post-meeting statement. I view productivity as a speed limit and on how fast the economy can grow without sort of increasing inflation pressures. And that's why we did see, at least at the end of last year, where we had quite strong growth in the economy at about 2.6% for the year end of 2025, we were seeing inflation pressures picking up even before the impact of the Middle East conflict, as growth was basically exceeding its speed limit due to the weak productivity growth.
Are there any other points from the statement, especially worth a mention today?
I'd say their unemployment rate forecasts, people might be looking at that, and it's quite high. They now expect the unemployment rate to reach 4.8%. Now, I wouldn't put that down to just straight out losses or job losses. I think that's largely due to they also upgraded their forecast on population growth. So they expect population growth just to be a bit stronger than where they previously anticipated. So ultimately, that just means that the supply of labor is going to outpace the demand for labor over the forecast horizon. And that naturally should see the unemployment rise a bit faster than what they had anticipated in May. But I would stress that an unemployment rate with a four in front of it is still quite low. Even if you compare it to where it was prior to COVID, it was, had a five in front of it. So we're doing quite well in this post-COVID era.
That was Anthony Maloof of Ebury. So how did the Australian share market respond? Well, at first with celebration, the S&P ASX 200 index rising as much as 0.5% before paring its gains after Michelle Bullock's hawkish talk on future rate rises potentially. The index finishing up 0.2% or 18 points at 9,250.6. Five of the 11 sectors climbed, led by energy stocks. Reporter Stephanie Youssef spoke to Mike Jenniker, head of Australian equities at UBS Global Wealth Management, for the market reaction to the rates decision. Also, his view on commodity prices and the corporate.
In fixed income and currency markets, therefore, has been relatively modest. Equities have rallied as the RBA is signalling that policy is restrictive, and it's prepared to see how the economy is evolving. There was also an indication that upside inflation risks would need to materialise for further cash increases. So it's this just reduces the risk on the downside for equities, and they're still expecting inflation to return to target in early 2028. Although there's been some reduction that followed the recent lower CPI print, this has been offset by expectations of more pass-through of cost increases from the Middle East conflict. So there hasn't been too much change, and the overall forecast is still in line with the expectations.
So where to from here? Are we expecting any more rate rise?
It remains gradual and is at risk of being derailed. But nevertheless, we agree that we are towards the end of the tightening cycle based on the current inflation and growth trajectories. So it is equally plausible that there won't be any more rate rises this year.
Let's talk about gold and a stronger US dollar. Why do you think that is?
There have been two key drivers of demand for gold. The traditional cyclical driver has been the link to US interest rates and the US dollar, and that's actually placed pressure on gold prices this year because higher interest rates in the US and a higher dollar makes gold less attractive. But if you step back and look at the medium-term picture for gold, particularly in recent years, the arguably more important and positive demand driver for gold has been investor diversification, which has been led by central banks and emerging market investors. And what that has led to this year is a significant amount of support for gold at $4,000 recently. And the demand for diversification is starting to rise, and that's why we're seeing a rally in the gold price. And what we've seen in recent years is that diversification demand has tended to overwhelm cyclical factors, and it's looking at this stage to be reasserting itself.
The Japanese yen has erased about half of the gains from that rare US-Japan intervention that happened just over a week ago. Does that tell us that the intervention failed, or is it too early to judge that?
It remains too early to judge, as currency interventions are only really effective if there is consistency with the fundamentals. which in this case is mainly driven by relative interest rates. Our base case, UBS, is aligned with the stabilization of the Japanese yen as we continue to expect a gradual tightening of policy by the Bank of Japan, whereas we are expecting unchanged policy from the Fed and risk of rate cuts as we move into 2027. So that combination, if it materializes, would tend to lead to less pressure for depreciation of the yen. So we think on a base case, it should be supportive.
Reporting season gets into full swing this week. What are you looking out for?
Given it's a full year reporting season for most companies, we are mostly focused on the outlook comments by management teams for fiscal year 2027. The importance of the outlook is market consensus as earnings growth broadening from the reliance on earnings growth just coming from the resources sector. That sector has accounted for all the ASX profit growth in fiscal year 26. But we do have these headwinds from higher interest rates, the tax changes, the disruption from the Middle East, and there's therefore a risk of a softer earnings outlook than market consensus. So those outlook comments will be key in terms of those risks and how they're being managed, and whether or not we'll see some softening in the outlook for fiscal year 27.
Finally, what are you telling your clients at the moment, and where are the opportunities for investors?
We continue to be positive on equities as earnings growth continues to be robust and it's spreading to a wider group of countries and industries. It is therefore appropriate, in our view, to be well diversified and not be overly concentrated in certain areas, even though some of those areas, such as technology, have done very well and that should continue. In Australia, we prefer exposure to natural resources. That's where earnings growth is presently strong, and is expected to remain so. You know, valuations are reasonable. And we also like good quality cyclical companies that can take advantage of ongoing economic growth. For more conservative exposures in fixed income, we see opportunity to lock in attractive yields over more extended timeframes, as cash interest rates are now around peak levels.
That was Mike Jenniker, Head of Australian Equities at UBS Global Wealth Management, speaking to Stephanie Youssef and wrapping up this podcast for this 11th of August. Give it a like, a review and subscribe if you enjoy it. And don't forget, you can watch On The Money during the 6:30 weekday edition of SBS World News on SBS. I'm Ranis Arampayat and Stephanie Youssef. Thanks for your company. Catch you another time.
Not long ago, just when you're about to take the lead against your friends in your favorite online race, then a game update starts downloading. The screen freezes. You imagine your friends overtake you one by one, probably laughing while doing so. Thankfully, with today's NBN speeds, updates are faster and more seamless, so races are decided without interruption on equal terms. The way we play online has changed. NBN has evolved alongside it with better speed built for how we choose to game. Visit nbn.com.au. Faster speeds applicable to FTTP and HFC technologies.